Hey, welcome to the Newstack Get Scaled podcast, a show about developing and managing elastic and dynamic services and systems. I'm your host, Alex Williams, here with Frederick Paul, a longtime tech journalist and now editor-in-chief at New Relic. This is a show that we do once a month. It's a fun show. We really enjoy talking to some of the smartest developers in the world here and the people who are managing these complex systems. So, Fred, thanks for joining us, and how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Alex. Thanks for having me back. New Relic is really excited to sponsor the Newstack at Scale podcast. As you said, it's a great, fun show, and we're especially interested in today's topic on being agile at scale. That's something that New Relic helps its customers with, and also something that we deal with ourselves as we've grown dramatically over the years. For our listeners, if you're not familiar with New Relic, New Relic APM, Application Performance Monitoring, and the rest of our software analytics products help thousands and thousands of customers consistently improve their software performance every day, all day. If you want to see how the New Relic Software Analytics Cloud is changing the game for modern businesses and modern software, go to, you guessed it, newrelic.com. Let's go, Alex.
All right. Well, let's get started and introduce our guest. Daniel, why don't we start with you just for the sake of alphabetical order?
All right. Hello. I guess I'm Daniel Moore, or Daniel X, as you could call me, on the internets. I work at Fog Creek Software, and I'm a developer on HyperDev, a new tool that lets people create applications very quickly and get them deployed faster than they could ever believe.
Eric?
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me. My name is Eric Sammer. I'm the CTO at a company called Workana. We build large-scale IT visibility and operational systems, mostly around super high-volume log, metric, and other kinds of business transactions or event data within the data center. So my background is primarily in combination of distributed systems, database management systems and storage systems, as well as operations, so running large data centers and clusters of machines.
Awesome. Well, as Fred mentioned, our focus is on, you know, agile and, you know, what it means to, you know, to think about agility at scale. And each of you are doing some pretty interesting work, Daniel and Eric. And so I want to think about the work that you guys are doing, but also, you know, considering it in context of the overall organization and how the individual is having to rethink, you know, their own kind of workflows and in the way that they participate inside the overall organization when a company is trying to scale out their own, you know, their own platforms. It's kind of an interesting time. More companies, almost any company, can think of, you know, software is at the center of what they do. And increasingly, they're managing data, you know, at a scale that they never quite imagined. Even if they don't really do it consciously, they know that they are dealing with a lot more information. And it really kind of sets the tone for how we think about application development. So you guys come from, you guys are interesting because, you know, you're both thinking about distributed systems. But we have very different contexts for it. So perhaps maybe, you know, Dan, you could give us your context for what you're doing and how it's affected your thinking about distributed systems at large, and then maybe Eric can provide his perspective.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. So my background is primarily, I guess, I focus on the front end in the web browser, HTML, JavaScript, CSS. I do a lot of CoffeeScript. I focus on things sort of from the web app perspective. Like, if you could just deploy your application as HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, then it could be a single-page app. You could call it serverless if you want. You can deploy it on S3 or GitHub Pages or Nginx. Like, it's extremely portable. And my background from, like, really focusing on the front end, not necessarily by choice because everyone will tell you JavaScript's terrible, but because if you want to get close to the user, like, really have an impact on their experience, you have to get into the browser and make it very easy for someone to access your application. Even if it's not the main focus of your application, you need a web page, you need a web front end, you need some kind of interface for it. And the browser is just the most accessible interface. And it seems like everyone has a phone, everyone has a tablet. These might not have a shell terminal, these might not have other things that people have. So if you want to be in front of a billion people and be accessible, you just need a web app at some point.
Eric, you're kind of smiling over here.
Yeah, it's funny. I couldn't agree more with Daniel. I'm sort of laughing at the JavaScript is terrible thing. I have to plead absolute ignorance of everything that happens from like REST APIs forward. So I know almost nothing about modern application development in the browser, only maybe enough to be dangerous. Luckily, I have the privilege of working with smarter people than me on those kinds of topics. My view of the world is pretty much everything sort of behind the API layer in whatever form that takes, working on sort of the storage system, data pipelines, you know, all of the infrastructure to drive where data is being served from or collected from over to those applications. So it's sort of an interesting intersection about sort of the two pieces to that and sort of how those things go together.
Fred, any thoughts? Any questions you have about this? Because they definitely come from different perspectives here.
Well, you know, it's interesting because scale happens everywhere, and certainly there's a back-end component, but I think the front-end component often gets overlooked when you talk about scale. But that's really, you know, increasingly where a lot of important stuff happens. So one, maybe ask both Eric and Daniel, where is that dividing point and how do you work together or work with the other parts of your team that deal with the back end or front end respectively for that handoff? You know, how does that work really? Or is it two completely separate initiatives?
Yeah, I think the sort of standard dividing point, like as is the dividing point between both of our experiences, is kind of at that REST API where a web app is then just another client to an API. And an API could serve web apps, it can serve console apps, it can serve other applications. So like that really, if you think of a web app as instead of being one giant app, which is usually three or four different apps having its own database, its own persistence, its own things, but think of it just as the UI part as the app, then you can like split a little API in there usually, which is kind of the microservices direction.
I think the interesting thing in thinking about it sort of more holistically for a second, I think engineers, developers, whatever, get into a whole lot of trouble when they start thinking about parts of the system rather than the complete and sort of holistic view of the system. So I'll give you a for instance. Just the, you know, a couple of weeks ago, there was a season finale happening on one of the big streaming companies. I won't call them out by name, but there were lots and lots of screenshots flying around on the internet about authentication, you know, failures and things like that from like iPads and iPhones and laptops and stuff like that. And a bunch of people were really upset because clearly the client side of that, the application side of that had scaled just fine, right? It has the power of all these devices and stuff like that. It's running client side. But the server side, like very clearly had an authentication problem. So the perspective from the user is that this application is not scaling, right? Is not handling the complete view of sort of what it needs to do. So from a user's perspective, and I think we lose this sometimes, we think about the client or the server or the database and we say things like, you know, technology XYZ scales and technology ABC does not. The reality is that like, while that may be true, you know, in certain cases, applications and systems scale, right? Not individual slices of it. So if you use the most scalable thing in the world on the front end and like a single monolithic, you know, system or application on the back end, you know, you're sort of in hot water, right?
So the other question is, how do we get agile into this equation? We're talking about scaling and front end and back end. Mm-hmm. How does agile come into this? Alex, maybe you want to try and put that in context a little?
No, I think that's great. I'd like to hear those perspectives on this.
Yeah, I guess. So I can talk a little bit about Hyperdev and what we're doing with that.
Yeah,
it's right. A tool. In case you haven't seen it, you can go to hyperdev.com. And as you go to that web page, in about 3 seconds, you'll already have an app running on the internet, a URL that you can hit. It's a simple Node.js Express app. And it's basically the fastest way to get your apps running. You go to a web page, your apps are running. And this, I assume, will, by lowering the barrier to people getting started, greatly increase the agility across all levels of an organization. And it's easy to think of these as like developer tools to make life easier for developers. It's actually a lot broader than that. Like what we found in developing Hyperdev is as the barrier gets lower and lower, more people in the organization who you might not traditionally think of as developers are able to contribute, are able to build applications, are able to solve their own problems because you might not consider themselves developers, but if you go to a web page, you already have an app and you just change a couple lines of code, maybe you're a developer actually. And like, I think developer, the only distinction is, has a high tolerance for BS on the command line, and then everyone else is just a person and they don't want to get their problem solved.
What do you think, Eric?
I probably have a really different perspective, and you know, my experience is, you know, very much sort of the enterprise world of like data management and data warehousing and stuff like that. So when I think about agility, I think about Fortune 100 and 500 customers kind of tripping over themselves to build systems or customer experiences, you know, like Facebook and Google and Twitter, they'll all tell you like, we want to work like that, but their internal infrastructure, their development methodology, their sort of time to market, everything about how they run their business is as you think it is, right? It's like large banks and insurance companies and things like that. So when you think about agility, for me, it's not just about how to get an individual productive, which I think is super important. I don't want to sort of discount the criticality of that. But for me, it's about how do you get a team of people to be able to take advantage of what another team within the organization is doing. So if you've got a bunch of people who are collecting customer behavior data for like a, you know, business intelligence and sort of what are our customers buying and stuff like that, and then you have another team of people who's responsible for running like a store online or something like that, can these two teams actually use the same data? You know, can they take advantage of the same systems? Do they spend 80, 90% of their time shuffling data around and transforming it into different formats so that they can work with it? So for me, it's a lot. And again, like this is definitely my viewpoint, you know, coming from my perspective, it's all about platforms that allow people to build applications that can be easily operationalized, deployed to production, can be easily scaled up once they've built that sort of hello world. Once they've, you know, tweaked the thing, they can actually put it in production and, you know, not having to jump through all the inefficiencies of the teams within the organization working in these silos from an infrastructure and technology perspective. You know, you could argue that a lot of the internal standardization and sort of technology first attitude of like a Google or a Facebook or something like that, where there is one way to do something, actually enables agility in a way that I think corporations that are sort of large and sprawling don't quite have access to. You know, they don't have access to those same kinds of platforms.
So Daniel, in the work that you're doing, does that create kind of like a shortcut in some respects?
Yeah, I think so. As I said with Hyperdev, you get started so quickly, it opens things up, but it doesn't solve all of those big problems of how do we have this massive database somewhere. Hyperdev isn't going to be hosting that database, but it's sort of like the glue between all these other pieces. And so if you do have a solid infrastructure, then Hyperdev could be a multiplier on top of that, get more people access to things, get people to prototype things. Because often, like, if you do need to provision or scale something out, before you've built it, you don't even know what the scaling story is. And so you could build a prototype in Hyperdev in, like, 1 hour. We actually do 1 hour hackathons. They've been pretty successful. We usually end up with something working and deployed to the internet within that hour. But so, like, anyone at your company could deploy some or prototype and deploy something within 1 hour. And then you kind of get a feel, okay, this only reads the first 100 records. This only does a little bit. But now I can see, okay, this is how it works for these 100. This is what the type of thing I need to scale it up. This is like the type of data storage I need to attach to it. And then you can kind of see how it fits into your existing pieces, your existing infrastructure, to just kind of like ease the pain of, we have these giant systems everywhere. how do we fit them together? And it's like, oh, I just need a little bit of, you know, glue to just smooth them over.
We're getting at scale, I think, pretty well here. I'm still not quite sure in my head, though, what we're talking about when we're talking about agile in this context. Are we talking organization? Are we talking technology? Are we talking processes? Are we talking methodologies?
I think so. They are all related. Like, you will find as an organization, the software you develop, the tools you develop are a reflection of your organization and a reflection of your process. So like if you have a very siloed organization, you'll develop like very siloed products and have very like clean distinctions. If you have a very sort of homogenous organization, there might be fewer boundaries between your tools. Like for agility in terms of deploying things fast, I assume that's going to be the definition I take is
okay.
Making a change and getting feedback from the real world.
Okay. So we're talking iterative processes here.
Yeah. I think that's how I
interpret it. Iterative.
Yeah. So, because like agility can mean all kinds of things. It can mean you are a certified scrum master and you follow the exact process dictated by agile, or it could mean, you know, it can mean whatever you want it to mean. But in my opinion, it's you make a change, you get something out in the world, you get some feedback from the world, and then you can make another change. And so like it's that whole loop of trying something and seeing its effect in reality and then making that change. So agility is shrinking the time of that loop.
Does that get harder as the scale gets bigger?
Yeah, I think it definitely does because you can start an app, like a single page app, a web app, anything, no database, no persistence, nothing. It could be like a landing page. It could be a pricing page. It has all the buttons of where people can buy your thing. It's not even hooked up to the database. It just like throws an error when you click the button. But at least you can learn, okay, did anyone click the button? And so like that'd be your first step. And then you can say, okay, now let's hook it into the database. Let's hook it into these other things. But if you release that and it turns out no one even wants it, if you just stop at that point, you've saved months of work. Just getting that feedback and remembering the empirical reality is like out there in the world. It's not in our heads. It's not in our office building. It's not even inside our systems and not necessarily inside our databases unless you like dig in there and find it. Like the empirical reality is out there and you have to get the feedback from somewhere out in the world.
I'll add on to that. I'm the grumpy ops guy. So like my entire life is dealt. It has been.
Embrace it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so the inner ops guy in me goes like, yes, I 100% agree with Daniel. At the same time, I'm like, oh, please don't put it in production until like it's HR and it's not going to wake me up at night and like all these other kinds of things, which I think is a good example of sort of how the world works and where these things get broken down, right? So I think the trick in order to do effectively what, you know, Daniel is describing, which I agree is like the you know, continuous integration, continuous deployment, democratizing access to those kinds of things and making that process repeatable and consumable, while at the same time not having Amazon.com throwing internal server exceptions and like all sorts of other, you know, crazy business with, you know, being able to deal with that kind of agility. And I don't think it's as simple as throw this thing into production and like cross your fingers and see how it goes.
I don't think that's really what Daniel's saying.
No, of course. No, I'm very purposely taking, you know, a semi sort of hyperbolic approach to that. But I do think that there is like this notion of like Facebook's move fast and break things. And the answer is, yeah, kinda, right? Unless it's the payment system, unless it's privacy controls, unless it's secure information security and all these other kinds of things. So I think that everybody wants the agility, but it seems like they get hung up with understanding how to get to that place where they can do those kinds of things for high risk, high value applications. Again, like you think things like online banking or ATM networks and all these other kinds of things.
So what is the secret then?
For me, it's all about process, which we can talk about. But from a technology perspective, it's also all about having the infrastructure to allow that. Mm-hmm. So with everything that you build and deploy, do you get instrumentation for free? Do you get monitoring for free? Do you get authentic? You know what I mean? Like in a world of AWS and Google Compute and all these other things, when you decide like, hey, we should be capturing logs or something like that, or, you know, we should put authentication in front of this, or load balancing, right? We want to load balance this cool thing we just built. That's a couple of clicks away. That's the kind of infrastructure that you need. Now, the question is, can you do that for everything? And how does that work for legacy applications? How do you build a culture around that? And that, I think, is an even trickier problem. But for me, it has to come complete. It has to be ready for production.
So let me ask you the one question I asked Daniel. How does that change at scale and at extreme scale? Does it get harder? Does it get fundamentally different?
I think that it does. I think it's easy. Agility is super easy for five engineers sitting around a table. Right? Agility is super painful when it's 1,000 engineers across, you know, geographic boundaries and stuff like that with different skill sets. I think as engineers, we like to go like, oh, it's a monad in the endofunctor space. And like, that's like the running joke, right? Because like, it's not that simple for new developers to be able to latch onto that stuff. So having those kinds of standards, making it easy to do the right thing, maybe that's the right way to say it, is actually super critical. And like, New Relic makes it easy to instrument your applications. So why wouldn't you do it, right? Those kinds of things. I don't know if that's a good answer, but I'll give you that.
Yeah, I could add on a little bit to that. Speaking of process and having the tools, like today as developers, we have almost an unlimited number of tools and they are getting easier and easier to integrate. They're like one click away on certain services. You can add, you know, a database of like two clicks. You can add Redis, you can add monitoring, you can add logging. But then like, if you don't have the culture and the process and the experience of how to use these things, how to use them effectively, to have like people with experience and in them to actually look at the logs to see, oh, when you make this change, our error rates are out of our normal threshold. It's not just the tools. And like, it's not even just technologically, because technologically we have the capability to have all of these tools. They exist, they're out there. You can find them, you can hook them up, but can you understand them? Can we learn from them? Can you actually take these gigabytes of logs we're generating every day and turn it into a signal that's reliable that you can then get some kind of information out of that can guide your decisions moving forward?
Well, and you have to make sure the right person or persons actually looks at it.
Yep.
And figures out, does something about it, and then tells the people who need to change things to do that, and then all needs to happen.
Or you have automated systems to do that.
Right. Well, and more can be automated, but there's always at some point where someone has to make a decision. And as it gets bigger and more complex, how that's harder, but also more dangerous to make it all automated.
How do you maintain standardization and sort of cohesiveness in an environment where you're trying to give teams and individuals autonomy around technology and stuff? Like, there's just human problems with that, right, that are hard to overcome.
So, you know, how do you guys think about discounting the human problem?
It's the only problem. The technology is fun to talk about, but the human problem is the only problem.
How do you mitigate the human problem?
I guess it goes into sort of psychology, sociology, how do you structure your company, right? So if your company structure is one guy's in charge and all the other people do what he says, then all of your systems, all of your process, all of your tools are going to mirror that structure. And if your company structure is anyone who has a good idea can get something out there, you know, then your tools and your process is going to mirror that. And it's not that you can just inject technology and change things. Like, it has to actually, you have to create the system, create the structure within your organization to achieve, if that's the result you want to achieve.
Yeah, I've heard of haywire stories about really big internet companies, you know, young ones, where there'll be two developers and, you know, kind of hanging out over a cup of coffee, and they'll be like, yeah, we got to build a microservice for this, and then this, and then this, and this. And they start going off and doing it, and then the organizational complexity goes haywire.
Yeah, and it's, again, about like the feedback also. So you can build all these services or like plan to build them and start building them, but when you put them in production, when customers are using them, like, that is when you actually see what you were supposed to have built. And So like the sooner you can do that, and if you can make smaller changes, get the feedback more quickly, you'll find that, oh, you know, maybe all these things we thought we needed, we don't need them just yet. We can add them later.
So let's just get back into what you guys are doing a little bit. Eric, what are you working on right now?
So, I mean, our whole mission is to be able to operationalize these kinds of systems, provide visibility into what's going on. So for us, collecting the digital exhaust, if you will, I'm not sure how I feel about that phrase, you know, the cast off logs, metrics, and again, higher order transactions, and be able to pull all of that information together in a single repository and then help people understand what's going on. So for us, that's about things like, okay, a machine went down over here, but who was, what transactions were in process when that happened? Which customers did that impact? And then marrying that with like business data. So, you know, are they high value customers? Are they the kinds of customers, you know, are those large transactions? Should we reach out to them and provide remediation coupons and all this other kind of stuff to those customers? So it's not, I don't like to think about it just as like log analytics or, you know, or anything like that. It's much more about sort of enabling that kind of visibility and digital transformation. At least that's how we think about it. So for us, it's a lot of back-end infrastructure to implement the data pipelines to be able to collect that kind of data, to be able to process it, store it, query it. And then, like Daniel said, to be able to sort of provide the right kind of, you know, insight or analytics on top of it so that people can make sense of it rather than it just being a bucket of events. And so there's quite a lot on the back-end side as well as the front-end side.
So how do you guys organize yourselves internally so you can, you know, practice what we've been discussing for the past 20, 30 minutes?
Yeah, you know, for us, agility means building infrastructure that our application engineering team can then take advantage of to build new products, new features that we haven't previously thought of without requiring like a mass team sort of reorg or something like that. So things like finding the right kinds of contracts, enabling the right kind of processes around if you have a good idea, if two people have a good idea, go try it, you know, and giving them the right kind of platform on top of which to try that so that they get a lot of the necessary stuff for free. And then the time to move that into a customer facing feature is relatively minimal.
Mm. So you almost give them the sandbox to work with.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Eric, what about your customers? What does it mean for your customers to do this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, and again, just a little bit of context. Typical customer for us is Fortune 500.
Exactly.
Top end.
Big scale.
Big scale, right? And that's sort of where we specialize, I think. So north of 10 terabytes a day of new data coming into the system, full fidelity retention, right? Keep it all online. So when you start talking about that kind of problem, the reason people are engaging us is so that they can build that single, I'm very reluctant to say single source of truth because we've promised that as an industry for a very long time. But I think that sort of strategic platform or repository for this kind of data so that DBAs and application developers and network admins and even business users are able to use all of that data for those kinds of purposes, right? For whatever purpose, you know, they have within the organization. So this, I think for a lot of organizations, is the technology portion, or at least part of it, to solving the agility problem across teams, right? Do they have the same view of the infrastructure that their customers do, that, you know, other teams within the organization do, or do they actually need to get someone from networking, someone from databases, someone from applications in the same room to try and figure that out?
That becomes then a process, doesn't it? To help them.
Yes. It very, very quickly, they say like, well, I buy this technology and then I'm agile, you know, problem solved. And, you know, we have to go like, well, not really, right? This is just as much a cultural shift and organizational shift as it is a technology shift.
Yeah, I think the technology or the product is just like the thing they buy that gives them permission to explore that change in their organization. Like they want to make this change. So they make this purchase and it's just like a way to commit to it and use it as like a reminder. Like, yeah, we can use this tool to help change ourselves.
So I think I'm going to start selling boxes of Agile.
It would work as long as it really helps change their heart.
And I think the more Agile I charge the for them, the more valuable they would be, even if there's nothing in them but air.
Yeah. The agility was in your heart all along.
Exactly. By buying the box, it frees you to do what you need to do all along.
At least it's horizontally scalable Agile, right?
Yeah, like,
you can buy lots of those boxes. The
scalability is through the roof.
Yeah.
An automatic download of DevOps is the other thing. My other product.
I know a couple of people that would buy that.
I have to say it's all very catchy. So Daniel, what's, you know, for, on your side, what are your internal operations look like for kind of a, you guys are very developer centric, and so I'm curious on kind of how you contrast yourself to what you heard Eric talk about.
I guess internally at Fog Creek, we are a very developer centric company. We're actually one of the older companies in technology at like 15 years, I think, which is pretty rare for technology companies. So it is a challenge to sort of maintain that agility over like a long history. And what we've done though is every year, basically we've launched some kind of new product or new idea. Some of them have been very successful, like Stack Overflow and Trello. Some of them you probably haven't heard of because they weren't so successful. And we're hoping that Hyperdev is another successful one, but sort of having that in our DNA of we do take risks, we do try new things, and we just like get that experience out in the world. We see where it goes. We do have an internal process for that called Creek Weeks, where two people at the company sort of get together, work for a week on some kind of idea, and then later we present it. And if it looks promising, then they can get time to continue it, to explore it further. So far, we've been able to keep up at least one new idea or project getting released like pretty big publicly to the world. I think we did like maybe 20 or so, or maybe 10 sort of idea stage things, and we whittled those down to 3. And then Hyperdev of the last couple of years was the most interesting one. It should be a muscle like you keep exercising as an organization, where you always have like a little something going on, like 10 or 20% in the background that's just, you know, free to explore. Because when the world changes, when things shift, like it's nice to have that experience of testing things, experimenting, seeing what might be valuable later. And if you sort of build up a bunch of these little seeds, then you can combine them, you can recompose them, they can inspire future ideas. Even developers could take something they learn, like if they explore a new tool or technology, they could apply it back on the project they're on later if it turns out to solve one of their problems.
Do your developers become operations people? Or
we have sort of a sysadmin split right now. So there's like developers generally work the code and system administration kind of handles operations. I sort of have mixed feelings about that, because if developers aren't getting paged in the night, like what's the incentive to stop the pages? So
yeah.
It's sort of that feedback loop where when pain happens, you want to try and focus it back into the source as close as possible.
For our podcast listeners, Eric is giving a big thumbs up to that idea.
Oh my God, I couldn't agree more.
You know, it's actually, Fred, a good subject for a show, actually. How do you actually make the pages stop? And I think probably this would be definitely part of that.
I think that's a really good idea. I mean, it's certainly something that New Relic, as we move increasingly into the ops space, is thinking about in a lot of ways, is how do you get the information to the right people who can fix it and who are incented to fix it?
Well, you guys, this has been a really fun conversation. I want to thank you guys for taking the time to talk with us today. I think we could probably talk for another hour or so. But I want to give you the last word. Is there anything else you'd like to say to these guys?
I'd like one question, maybe for both Daniel and Eric. If you had one piece of advice for companies trying to be agile at scale, what would it be? What would you tell companies to do that, you know, from your own experience?
I would say go to hyperdev.com and now an application. Now you're agile. Your application's already deployed.
Done. I think you could also go to hyperdev.com. That sounds like a great thing to check out. My sense is to think about it holistically. It's not just technology. It's just as much process and people. I think it's really hard to separate those things. And to really take a hard look at what the problem you face actually is versus looking at like the vendor technology. And I say this as a vendor, right? Like look with a critical eye at the promises that are being made and ask if these are the things that actually help your business. If your challenge is prototyping applications, then go look for something that helps you prototype applications. But you know, don't buy DevOps in a box or Agile in a box, right?
You just crushed my business there.
I did, you know, Fred, you and I are buddies, so I feel bad about doing it. But yeah, I think it's really important to have sort of a holistic approach or cohesive approach to this kind of stuff.
Well, great. Well, Fred, thank you very much for another excellent show of the New Stack at Scale. Daniel, Eric, thanks for joining us and look forward to keeping in touch.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Great fun, Alex.